Blog Talk Radio.
All right, turn it up and stand back. You're about to feel our reach. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for
Hard Starboard Radio.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible.
Now I'll be back. I'm not tripping.
got to be kidding me. You're it. You're the Black Pasmius.
No, Jasmius. Of the Hard Starboard Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com/HSR Network. I'm still your host, Jasmius, your ruler, your benevolent despot, your fountain rabbi of conservatism, constitutionalism, Christianity, common sense, your conservative Ronan. Whenever I decide to show up. Call in number 646-478-5068. Email address jasmius@comcast.net. Follow me on Twitter at Jasmius, capital J, capital A, capital S, lowercase M-I-U-S. And your repository for your education, edification, enlightenment, and entertainment in all your life's endeavors, youtube.com/hardstarboardradio. Now, I am fully aware that in the first quarter of 2018, prior to the airing of today's program, I have done exactly one podcast. I was doing this program on a weekly daily basis through December 22nd. And December 22nd was the day before December 23rd, which was when my daughter and her fiancé, my presumptive son-in-law, came up for Christmas, and also they and, in other words, intern Missius, intern Hapless Aid, and intern Gerhardt went in together to get us a new kitty following the passing of S'more. Oh, I'm sorry. Gotta have these audios all ready to go. Since the three of them went in together to get us a new kitty since the dearly departed passing of the mascot, the original mascot of this program, S'mores the Wonder Kitty. New kitty being Reese's Peanut Butter Cat. And, of course, her audio here, where is it here? I know I can find it. She shares it with Midi, intern Demisius's cat, but this applies to Reese's peanut butter cat as well.
You never know, it might be. Feed me!
Are you that damn hungry right now, kitty?
Yeah!
Every morning and every evening, that is what you will hear at Hard Starboard Galactic Headquarters. And then, of course, that was Friday, December 23rd, so because we were having company, there was no live Hard Starboard Radio Network podcast that day. Then the following day, Saturday, December 24th, my dear old dad went into the hospital for the final time. And then, you know, the next day was Christmas. Then the day after that, I did the following week, I did best of shows because, you know, we were anticipating. I mean, the doctors initially said that my dad would be in the hospital for about a week. And then it turned out to be longer than that. Middle of that week, he took a turn for the worse. And he ended up being in the hospital for about a month. And then he beat the malady that had him in the hospital, and then it took so much out of him, he was never able to rally and get back to his normal self, and he died on January 24th. And I went into detail on all of this on the one podcast I've done in 2018 up until today, on I believe it was February 9th. Now, what has happened since? Well, that was my tribute show to my dad. Now, what has happened since then? Well, right after I did that podcast, I came down with a terrible cold that Mrs. Hart Starbird brought into the house, but it's not her fault because I went out of my way to expose myself to it in a way that you can probably deduce. From, you know, for longtime listeners of the program, you know what I'm referring to. In other words, I could have kept my distance, but I just couldn't resist a certain something, and so I got in way too close for physical proximity, and I came down with her cold, and I mean, full blast, full bore. And I had it for like 2 weeks, and, oh, wow, that was Friday, huh? I'll have to look at it since I just noticed something. I'm in my broadcasting studios for the first time, and actually for the first time since December 22nd, because, February 9th, I was out in my living room doing that podcast. At any rate, I came down with a terrible cold, and that was like 2 weeks. And thereafter, I just didn't feel like it. I just wanted to relax, think, ponder, reflect, mourn. Wondering, you know, I mean, aside from this podcast, what is my purpose now? What do I do now? Because after my career was destroyed, I came to realize that, well, I was being separated by the Lord for this service to my dad, to be there for him, to look after his affairs, spend time with him, to help him, and to honor him in word and in deed. And now he's gone home to glory. He's reunited with Mom, and he's with the Lord. And now what do I do? And so I've taken a hiatus. I think it's well earned. And I'm not making any promises whether I'm going back bringing this podcast back on a daily format or a weekly format. I mean, it's been both several times over the, it's almost 11 years that this program has been on blogtalkradio.com. And so, I'm feeling like I'm coming out of that tunnel, feeling like I can, I've been, you know, on social media certainly over that time, but fighting the good fight for constitutional conservatism against the hordes of the Democrat Party and Cult 45, I may be coming out of it now, maybe decide to get back into the podcasting end of the pool. But frequency, format to be announced. But I wanted to be with you today because of course, what happened this week, especially toward the end of the week. And I want to do with it like I have so frequently done in the past. I want to take you down the narrative of this past week and just exactly how we ended up with what I call, not so affectionately, the Trumpnibus disgrace.
Thank you. this place is restricted, Wang, so don't tell me you're Jewish. Okay, fine. Oh, I can maybe have a half dozen of those Vulcan D-10s and set my friend up here with the whole schmear. Oh, this is the worst looking hat I ever saw. Well, you buy a hat like this, I'll bet you get a free bowl of soup, huh? Oh, it looks good on you, though.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat? Let's go while we're young.
Mine, sir. Mine to you off.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Yeah. Okay, you can owe me.
I owe you nothing.
Four.
That's a fine shot.
I should have yelled two.
So what do you got in here, rocks?
Are you kidding? When I was your age, I would lug 50 pounds of ice up 5-6 flights of stairs.
So what?
So what? So let's dance.
This is the biggest see I told you so, the biggest never Trump see we told you so yet. The biggest one yet, and they're just going to continue, folks, because Cult 45 will never admit their mistake. They will never admit that they got taken, swindled, bilked, hoodwinked, fooled. They'll never admit it. They're too proud to admit that we were right all along and they were wrong. To acknowledge that character is, after all, destiny. And we start last Monday. The estimable Daniel Horowitz at Conservative Review. And I'll tell you, this is why I saved this one, because I just knew. I knew what was going to happen. I knew what the Trumpligans, the Democrat spending bill that the Trumpligans were grinding up, were putting together in the House and then in the Senate, and I knew Trump was going to sign it. He has not vetoed anything. He has not issued a single veto. He's been in office for 14, almost 15. No, wait a minute. I'm sorry. He's been in office for 14 months. As of today, 14 months and 5 days, he has yet to issue a single veto. If he has, I don't know how I missed it, because I would think it would have made some big news if he had issued a veto. Not a single veto in 14 months. And there's been quite a lot to veto. Like this past week, for example. But here's a headline at Conservative Review. Mr. President, it's time to make your veto pen great again or be a lame duck. This is why I love kind of looking back at things, at even headlines like that, and okay, it's like when the 10th and 11th doctors both whipped out their glasses, put them on, and then they noticed each other's glasses, and they went, oh yeah. I've been watching a lot of Doctor Who over the course of my hiatus, so which I've come to appreciate and come to find out more about, and why it's pretty much done now. But that's a story for another day and another podcast, another channel, really. This week, Horowitz began may well determine the outcome of the midterm elections. Hint, hint, hint. I have, now this is what Ronald Reagan said in 1985. I have my veto pen drawn and ready for any tax increase that Congress might even think of sending up. And I have only one thing to say to the tax increasers. Go ahead. Make my day. See, Ronald Reagan stood for something. And everyone knew what he stood for. He was a rock-ribbed conservative ideologue. And nobody had to wonder about what... Ronald Reagan was not unpredictable. He was eminently predictable. And he won a lot, ladies and gentlemen. Unlike his remote successor, Donald Trump. Now, have you ever imagined what our founding fathers would think if they were to come back alive and witness the starry state of our republic and the system they created in 2018? I'd love to see the look on their faces were they to see, of all things, the fact that the presidential veto barely exists and instead the judiciary vetoes legislation. Donald Trump has never used his veto pen. You might not find that surprising, since the political party he hijacked controls Congress. But Trumplicans have been passing one budget bill after another that violates every tenet of Trump's alleged campaign agenda. Trump's veto pen is an extremely powerful tool to leverage a president's agenda, particularly on budget bills. Vetoes have been overridden only 111 times in our nation's 242-year history, just 8 times since President Reagan's tenure. Yet Trump seems to think he must sign anything that passes. He refuses to even threaten a veto until about an hour or two on Friday, and well, we'll get to it. Just wait. That time is now. Or never. It's now or never. La da da da. Now remember, this is as of last Monday. This week may very well determine the outcome of the midterm elections. Hint, hint, hint. The Trumpnibus budget bill, which will fund all government programs for the remainder of the fiscal year, will be voted on this week. It was, all right. This is the last opportunity for Trump to score points for his agenda and build a narrative from which to win back voters. Sadly, unless conservatives are vigilant, this bill will provide even more victories for the left while depressing conservatives. It will fund sanctuary cities, fund Planned Parenthood, bail out insurance companies, bail out Obamacare, in other words, and create more and more massive debt. Amidst the clamor over palace intrigue in the White House and endless scandals, this is the single most important story of March. Hint, hint, and hint. The most potent weapon in the president's arsenal of constitutional tools is the veto. As Alexander Hamilton wrote in Federalist 73, a veto not only serves as a shield to the executive, but it furnishes an additional security against the inaction or enactment of improper laws. It establishes a salutary check upon the legislative body calculated to guard the community against the effects of faction, precipitancy, or of any impulse unfriendly to the public good which may happen to influence a majority of that body. Our founders understood that the legislature would predominate in a republic, which is why they gave the president this powerful tool. As Madison said, ambition must be made to counteract ambition. Now, if we had spoken to the founders during the Constitutional Convention, they would have had, they would have candidly admitted that their master plan could run off the tracks in many different ways. One thing they likely never considered, though, was that the presidential veto pen would turn out to be a weak tool. Before proposing the balance of a veto override, the founders were concerned that the absolute negative of a presidential veto would shift the balance of power way too far to the executive. During the debate of June 4, 1787, see, there's still constitutional education on this program. I haven't strayed from my roots, even if Douglas V. Gibbs has strayed from his. By supporting Trump, of course. When James Wilson and Alexander Hamilton proposed a veto power, Benjamin Franklin contended that past experience showed that governors using such power led to executive extortion. No good law whatever could be passed without a private bargain with him, complained Franklin. The great Roger Sherman feared enabling any one man to stop the will of the whole because no one man could be found so far above all the rest in wisdom. The convention debated back and forth the need for a veto override. They originally passed a motion to set the threshold for an override at 3/4 of both houses of Congress, but after Roger Sherman, Charles Pinckney, Hugh Williamson, and Elbridge Gerry voiced concerns that this would place power in the hands of a president and a small number of allies, enough to defeat a 3/4 vote. A sharply divided convention hall settled on a 2/3 threshold to override the veto. Additionally, they rejected the original purpose of a council of revision suggested by Madison, which would have placed the veto in the hands of a joint council between the president and some Supreme Court justices. Yeah, we'll get to it. Instead, the president alone would have such power. How tragic and ironic that now we have an illegal lower court, even, judicial veto, yet the executive veto is almost never used, and never used by Donald J. Trump. It is clear the founders felt the presidential veto was a very potent tool, and many feared its abuse. Even its chief proponent, James Wilson, who wasn't concerned about its abuse, agreed that it would serve as a powerful silent operation. He did predict it would seldom be used, not because of the weakness of the veto, but because Congress would know that such a power existed and would refrain from such laws as it would be sure to defeat. Now, isn't it time for the president to make clear where he stands and issue clear veto threats on the Trumpnibus? If it doesn't fund a minimum threshold of his alleged priorities, and if it continues funding sanctuary cities and Planned Parenthood, he should make it clear that bad bills will be headed for defeat, as Wilson envisioned. Oh, man, gallows humor is never... It is the biggest booming industry in this country the last... What is now, the last 10 years or close to it? The word veto in Latin means I forbid. The president, Trump, should use his bully pulpit to say that on behalf of his electorate, he forbids funding for a private organization under criminal investigation for harvesting baby organs. That he forbids funding for the issuance of visas that bring in dangerous people to this country. That he forbids funding for Obama's executive amnesty and executive regulations that the courts are illegally perpetuating. That he forbids federal grant funding for sanctuary cities that endanger the entire federal union, are preventing us from redressing the drug smuggling crisis and defy federal immigration law. And that he forbids the mortgaging of our future with crushing debt and skyrocketing interest payments to Red China. He didn't forbid any of that, did he? Well, what about a government shutdown, you might ask? One-sixth of the government, if that. No such thing as a government shutdown in practice. The thing about government shutdowns, if you just shut down the government long, which would be like one-sixth of it, so don't get carried away, long enough, people might realize, hey, you know, our lives haven't really changed. I mean, with so much of the federal government, federal spending being statutory as opposed to discretionary, statutory meaning by law as opposed to discretionary meaning Congress has to appropriate it, then government shutdown, let's just say government shutdowns ain't what they used to be. If Trump remains resolute, remains? What do you mean remains? When was he ever resolute about anything? I mean, aside from himself. And uses his bully pulpit, he can intimidate GOP leaders into passing his what bill? He didn't have any bill in the House. He was totally uninvolved in the whole process. He didn't know what they were doing. Hell, he didn't know what he signed on Friday. He could intimidate GOP leaders into passing his bill out of the House. Then in the Senate, GOP leaders can force Democrats into talking filibuster. They would be the ones who would have to stand before the American people and block a bill funding the government over funding for sanctuary cities and endless speeches that must continue until all senators have spoken twice. And this is what you really expected when you nominated, when you pushed this guy, Trumplicans? Is that what you really seriously expected? Well, of course it was, because Trumplicans are dumbasses, idiots, morons, suckers. So here's the grim reality that the president is facing. Congress will not pass budget reconciliation this year and will not directly reform the filibuster. Not a single one of his alleged priorities, assuming they are indeed his priorities, will pass this year, nor will Trumplicans have 60 votes next year either, even if they wind up winning the election. His veto is his last point of leverage. Unless Trump makes the veto pen great again, the status quo on policy will reign supreme while we spend ourselves into oblivion. Unless he uses his veto pen now, with a GOP Congress to leverage his alleged priorities and build a narrative for November, he will be confronted with a Democrat Congress next year. I'd say that's about right. Mitch McConnell, 50% Trump. Because there was a House version, there was a Senate version, and then Trump signed it. So it's not all Trump's fault, but I call it the Trumpnibus because his name goes on everything, and it's so conducive to that. And he didn't fight it. He didn't participate in the process whatsoever. And he didn't fight it, he didn't resist it. And he threatened a veto for a couple of hours Friday morning, and he was never serious about that, and we're going to get to that as the program unfolds today. It was and is the Trumpnibus disgrace. I tweaked the National Review editorial's headline. Because if you say omnibus, I mean, you ask the question, well, which one? There have been so many. Omnibus and cromnibus and this bus and that bus. Well, this is the Trumpnibus, ladies and gentlemen. And it is a disgrace. The Trumpnibus spending bill was crafted in secret and... Well, now this was Thursday, ladies and gentlemen, Thursday morning. So just so you know where we are on the timeline here. The Trumpnibus spending bill was crafted in secret and will be passed under pressure. Raises discretionary spending as the national debt grows and fails to deliver on any major GOP priorities except increased defense spending. What might turn out to be the signature achievement of of unified Trumplican, well, GOP controls Congress, they don't control the White House, that's Trump. Now, this year is the sort of legislation that would have been right at home in a Hillary Clinton administration. Start with the process. The 2,232-page bill was written in secret by leaders of both parties, unveiled Wednesday night, and passed by the House Thursday afternoon. If the Senate doesn't pass the budget by Friday, and of course they did, didn't waste any time, the government was shut down. So much for the 72-hour rule Republicans sought back during Barack Obama's first term. The procedural abuse means that many lawmakers are voting up or down on a bill they didn't write and had no opportunity to debate or even read. It adds up to a breakdown of the budgetary process. It's not a breakdown of the budgetary process, because that suggests that the budgetary process was functioning any time in recent memory. It's still broken down, in other words. A particular embarrassment for Congress, given that passing budgets is one of the few duties that it still discharges with regularity. It's been broken down for well over a decade. at least, ladies and gentlemen. No, I take it back. 2009, I think. It was 2009, 2010, somewhere in there. That was the last time that Congress passed a budget on time. And as far as individual appropriations bills, I don't know. I don't know when the last time was that Congress actually passed individual cabinet-level department by cabinet-level department appropriations bills. That just never happens anymore. Didn't happen under Democrats. Didn't happen under divided government, divided Congress. Didn't happen. Not happening now under unified GOP control. So, you know. And after it goes back to the Democrats this fall and in the next Congress, it won't resume then. I can promise you that. And Trump will sign all their stuff too, all their bills. But we'll get to it here. The massive 13% increase in discretionary spending over last fiscal year. 13% in a single bleeping year was prefigured by the agreement on budget caps that congressional leaders reached in February. It remains remarkable that even with control over control over both houses of Congress anyway, the GOP cannot secure funding for the military without dangling such unnecessary spending for domestic programs. The specifics of the spending aren't much better. The bill provides funding for immigration enforcement, both internally and at the border, but the devil is in the details. Set aside that the dollar amount falls far short of what the Trump administration allegedly requested. There are onerous restrictions even on the money that is appropriated, limiting, for instance, the number of illegal aliens that Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, can detain. Even with the leverage of DACA, what leverage? Remember Trump said, I'm going to review this for 6 months, and if I don't get a DACA fix, then I'm going to rescind it. Well, the deadline for that was 3 weeks ago. I haven't seen any rescissions of you. The immigration proclamation is still in force, ladies and gentlemen. Still in force, Colt 45. What do you think of them apples, huh? There are onerous restrictions even on the money that is appropriated, limiting, for instance, the number of illegal aliens with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, can detain. Even with the there is no leverage from DACA. Trumplicans failed to meaningfully tighten the immigration system. Isn't that something, Trumpies, that you would have thought that your guy would have vetoed the bill over? Wouldn't you think? Why didn't he? On health care, the hope of deregulating the individual insurance market to counteract rising premiums has been dashed. Remember, Trump said he would repeal Obamacare on day one. The one-man Congress. It seems increasingly likely that the GOP has given up on repealing Obamacare and is unable to even to reduce its continuing burdens on the public. Which is why, quite apart from Trump, I got no more use for the GOP, frankly. No, seriously. Let's say that Trump resigned tomorrow, and Mike Pence succeeded him, and I really don't have a whole lot of respect for Mike Pence because of how he's totally sold himself out to Donald Trump, much like I don't have a whole lot of respect for Douglas V. Gibbs for more or less the same reason, although they're not in the same roles, obviously. But even if that happened, I wouldn't rejoin the Republican Party. The GOP is dead to me. First because of Trump, and then because, well, they never even bothered. They never even pretended to repeal Obamacare. You know, that's what they, that was the whole thing. For seven years, into, if you count last year, the GOP vowed, we're going to repeal Obamacare, we're going to repeal Obamacare, we're going to repeal Obamacare. And then when they got theoretically in a position to do so, where theoretically there was someone in the White House who would have signed it, and for the record, I think Trump would have signed it. I don't think Trump doesn't read what he signs anyway, so who cares, right? And they didn't even try. They didn't even try. So I really don't have any use for the GOP anymore. If Trump was gone tomorrow, I wouldn't return to the GOP. I'd remain independent because the GOP is a failure. The GOP, you know, they didn't deliver, and, you know, okay, didn't deliver. Well, you know, screw you. You didn't deliver. You don't have my vote. You don't have my support anymore. Federalist Party, here we come. Meanwhile, the $21 billion dollars in, well, the $21 billion infrastructure boondoggle is not offset with permitting reforms that could spur private investment, which is the BS fraud that Trump used to sell his twice as big as the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, Obamacare. You remember what we refer to, what we've always, this goes back to 2009, as a matter of fact, what we've always referred to the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the stimulus as on this program, from the Grooveyard of Forgotten Favorites, Hogzilla. And Trump's is twice as big, and I guess $21 billion was, what, a down payment or something? But, you know, that... And he sold it was going to be public-private partnerships. We're going to get a little private investment, but that'll reduce the federal portion of it. Well, not this year. Not this year. No, we welcome, hold on a second. Yeah, not this year, $21 billion in infrastructure funding, at least he didn't say investments, is not offset with permitting reforms that could spur private investment as had been promised. And we welcome the defense spending and the funds devoted to combating the opioid epidemic might make a difference, but if this bill winds up being the only major piece of legislation Congress passes in 2018, and it will, this midterm election campaign is right around the corner, then this year will have been a legislative waste. Well, it is now. During the Obama regime, we argued that the federal budgetary process had become an exercise in reckless liberal overreach. The federal government was abusing the budgetary process, we said, with wasting money and expanding itself at the expense of civil society. The hope was that once the GOP gained power, it would act with procedural integrity, begin to try to return the government to its proper role, and deliver significant conservative victories on budgetary policy. In other words, it was a forlorn hope because of who GOP, who foolish, gullible GOP primary voters nominated for president in 2016. Instead, Trumplicans are poised to pass a Trumpnibus bill that, with the exception of the defense spending, is an embarrassment and disgrace. And, ladies and gentlemen, that doesn't even begin to describe it. Fortunately, we have hour number two in which to do so. We'll be back after these full commercial words after the top of the hour break on the Hard Starboard Radio Network on this Sunday afternoon, a lazy Sunday afternoon, March the 25th, 2018. Stick around.
Welcome to a new way to communicate. A new source of news, information, and computer software. Introducing American Online.
Hey, with American Online, I can just point and click.
Oh, wait. With American Online, you can send and receive email, even across the internet.
Hey, I've got email. Okay, I open the mailbox. No, that's not it. Maybe I... No. Damn.
American Online puts you in touch with information resources all across the country.
How do you get this thing... Open! Open! Application in use? What application? I can't even start any applications!
Call now for your free trial. You'll get free software and 10 hours of free online time your first month, which you can spend trying to figure out how to open your even online. It's knowledge. It's power.
It sucks!
The PC-770 copy jet from Canon. 28 copies per minute. Zoom reduction and enlargement capabilities. 5800 DPI color resolution and an internal memory of over 34 megabytes. Quite possibly the most sophisticated photocopier ever invented. But can it copy your ass? The Xerox 790 Ass Jet can. Photocopying your ass on a standard copying machine can result in blurs, blackouts, and an overall compromise of ass clarity. But the 790 Ass Jet's 208-bit microprocessor ensures a perfect copy every time. With its Polyform Ventrix molded ass bucket and DuraStress pad, the Ass Jet ensures quality ass copying without breakage or discomfort. And with the AssJet Laser Matrix Mosaic Printer, you can make a very big ass. Xerox AssJet 790. Superior ass copying technology for the next century.
Hi, Gordon. What you been up to?
Big thanks, Fred. I'm a full-time student at bartending college.
Wow! I never had time for a formal education.
Well, I decided to make time, but it's not easy. Bartending college is a 4-week course.
Gee, how far along are you?
Well, let's see. This is Tuesday, the third week. Hey, I'm a junior, and I'm late for a daiquiri lecture. Why don't you join me?
Why not?
Bartending college.
You've already spent enough time on the other side of the bar to qualify for enrollment.
Bartending college.
We'll teach you everything you need to know. You'll get a starter set of bartenders jokes like...
So I says to the guy, you can stay, but the cow's gotta go.
Bartending college.
You'll learn how to roll drunks, water the liquor, and skim the cash register. And remember, as the bartender, you drink for free.
Last call.
For integrity.
Hello, I'm Frank Bartles, and this here's my partner, James Brown. As the weather starts getting too hot, we hope you will reach for one of these. New Bartles and James Brown Wine Cooler.
It tastes good!
They come in three funky flavors. Gravity Grape,
get down.
Crime of Passion Fruit,
oh, kill myself.
And my personal favorite, Papaya.
Papaya's got a brand new bag.
It'll get you off faster than a big city lawyer.
Woo!
And a single pack serves 6 to 10, just like James.
New Bartles and James Brown Wine Coolers. The cooler cooler, made in the cooler.
Now behind bars everywhere.
And thank you for your support.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Every so often, an opportunity comes along that is truly once in a lifetime.
Sign here, please.
Yeah, sure.
The Fine Print Mint proudly introduces the American Bimbo Collection.
Oh, great! Marla Maple!
Each month, you'll receive a classic American Bimbo, lovingly handcrafted by the artisans of the Fine Print Mint. There's Jessica Hahn, Donna Rice, Robin Givens, Rob Lowe, even Ted Kennedy. And each Bimbo is crafted from material as cheap and tacky as they are.
Look, Dad! Her head was hollow!
Collect them. Swap them. Put them on a pedestal and then knock them off. Your family will spend hours admiring the amazingly accurate detail on each and every Bimbo.
Look at the bongos on that one, son.
And if you act now, we'll rush you the complete Steve Garvey collection, including all his illegitimate children. To order, send your check to 12 Easy Pieces, Post Office Box T&A, Jigglemore, Colorado, for the American Bimbo Collection.
Great set. Hi, Dad.